Hello and welcome to Kitchen Curiosity. I'm your host, Radford Chancellor. On the fifth episode of the show, we're recording at the Three Michelin Star Waterside Inn. And my guest is an extraordinary gentleman who decided to become a chef at the age of just 14 and officially embarked on his culinary career at the age of 16. He secured a two-year pastry apprenticeship in Paris. There followed many years working in some of France's finest restaurants before joining forces with his father, Michel Roux, OBE, at the Waterside Inn. Our guest has an undisputable passion for food, a master pâtissier, and famously quoted as saying, "Desserts are his passion." He's chef patron of the Waterside Inn, which I might add is the only restaurant outside of France to retain three Michelin stars for more than 30 years running. He's a member of the Roux family, and he's a joint chairman of the highly accredited Roux Scholarship. This is to name but a few of his achievements. I'm delighted to welcome to the show Mr. Alain Roux. Good morning, Alain. Thank you for having us here at the Waterside Inn. It's a real pleasure to meet you in person. How are you?
Very well, Radford. It's a pleasure and welcome at the Waterside Inn.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You might not know this, but tradition in this series is the guest from the last show asks the first question to the guest of the current show. So on the last show, I had Daniel Galmiche.
My friend, Daniel Galmiche. Okay, well, he better have a nice question for me. Otherwise, I'll be calling him soon.
Yeah. Oh, my word. Yeah, so he worked for your family at Gavroche, I believe.
Yes, for the family in the early days.
In the early days, yeah.
Yes.
So his question to you was, you know, he's got great admiration for the Roux Scholarship, and his question was, is there anything that him as a chef or the industry can do to support the Roux Scholarship?
Yes, always. I think being a special cooking competition, I think what's important is for people to understand that they should try to push the youngsters to enter that competition. But not only that, to make sure that they have the support of their peers, you know, being their boss or their head chef or even a good chef de partie, mm-hmm. or the sous chef in the brigade. It's try to, you know, do part of the journey of that competition and to bring that support to motivate as well people, because it's not easy to do a cooking competition, especially the Roux Scholarship. So, you know, when you have to do your day-to-day work and you're working as a cook in a restaurant or an hotel or in a food outlet, you know, you have to take time sometimes off work.
Yeah.
So it's trying to maybe help those young people who are willing to have a go at it and enter the competition to try to give them a bit of spare time, if possible, during their work time.
To get involved, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And to follow them throughout the competition,
yeah.
Even if it's reading the written recipe, but doing the trial, the testing of the recipes, trying to, you know, educate, you know, those young chefs.
Yeah. Okay. So did you always know you wanted to follow in your family's footsteps and become a chef?
Not really, okay. But saying that, quite an early stage.
Right.
Yeah, I guess I was about 14 years old.
Okay.
When it was in my mind. I only told my dad and my mum a year before.
Right.
I started, I was 16.
Okay. And that's when you went to your apprenticeship in the...
Apprenticeship as a pastry young chef,
yep.
In Paris. That's how it started.
Okay. So I know that you're famous. I mean, obviously, you're very highly accredited pâtissier, master pâtissier, chef. And you're famous saying that desserts are your obsession, I think. How would you describe your culinary style in three words, really, or in general? Yeah.
Difficult to say. but, yeah, cooking for me is all about... Ingredients. So if you look at ingredients, it has to be seasonal. It has to be local. or as much as possible.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's all about taste rather than the looks.
Yeah.
You know, having an Eiffel Tower on a plate, that's fabulous, but it's not my first goal. My goal is to see, it's all about textures and flavors.
Right. Okay. Perfect. Thank you. What was the most valuable lesson that you've learned from your father, Michel Roux, during your time in the kitchen with him?
It was to understand when you're a cook working in a professional kitchen, catering for guests, that you don't actually cook for yourself.
Yeah.
You're cooking for a guest. So it's trying to understand what people are looking for, what people like.
What they want,
so
yes.
You can bring some personality in your cooking and in your dishes, your creations, but you have to remember that you have to adjust and you have to please the customer. Customer is making the effort to come to your premises, to your restaurant, and on top of that, is paying.
True. So are you kind of saying that you adapt your cooking sometimes different countries? I know you're involved in other places around the world.
Yes, very. Cooking has no limit, and you have to adapt for your guest.
Right.
You know, it could be a question of age. Yeah, we all have a different education about food.
Yeah.
And we all have a different palate. So the best thing is to try to have a little knowledge about the your guest taste and their preferences, rather than, you know, taking the risk and just cooking what you like and what you you do.
Yeah, that's it. We've seen that, haven't we, sometimes?
You have to look at having a balance, I would say.
Yeah, okay. So you're a renowned chef. I mean, obviously, very, very famous renowned chef. What kind of message or impact do you feel that you have brought to the culinary world?
Well, those are strong, big, strong words.
They are.
my family name is certainly renowned. What my uncle and dad have done is immense. I think that they've been definitely part of the leaders in our industry.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's you know, just trying to do my job, trying to do what I love, and trying to keep the legacy going.
Yeah,
I love what I do, and what I do is basically feed people, bring pleasure and happiness to people coming to visit the restaurant, and it's working in a great team, and you can't beat it. It's like having a second family, and what we can deliver and do with that number of people and those people who've got so much skill and so much different personality and the passion. It's a joy. It's unbelievable.
How many staff have you got employed here? At
the Water Side Inn, if we count, you know, the front of house on the floor, in the restaurant, the kitchen with the pastry, my baker, we've got 12 rooms, so we've got the chambermaids, we've got the breakfast team, we've got a bit of land, so we've got a gardener, we've got a doorman to greet a guest when they arrive with their car, or even their driver or taxi. What else? We've got two private dining rooms. So, yeah, the team altogether, I would say we're around 85.
Cool.
To 88, yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah,
it's a full...
A few apprentices as well.
Yeah.
You know, so I just count everybody, you know, KPs as well. They're not only my best friends, but I just admire their hard work.
Yeah.
Couldn't work with, you know, do my business, couldn't run it without a good KP.
Yeah, and a good team.
Mm-hmm.
So... The final question at this part of the show, Alan, I mean, it's a bit, for you, I feel like I'm preaching to converted because I imagine you've cooked for many, many famous people, but it's something that I pose to all my chef guests. You're doing a dinner party, three or four guests. Who would you invite, famous or non-famous people, and dead or alive, and what sort of menu would you do for them?
In that case, yeah, it's a question where I would answer back family. I think we all have a family, or we try to have a family.
Yeah.
And it's important. It's important to have close people that can make up as a family. I'm lucky to have a family, even if it's shrinking more than anything the last few years. But, you know, I would love to have a family meal.
Yeah.
With people that are gone or people that are still here. And yeah, it's just, I think, a meal made with things that grow on site.
Okay.
And a little maybe addition of fresh black truffle.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
That's, so what sort of things you grow? Are you growing everything here or what?
Not quite, but we are starting. We've got a bit more planters and cold frame that have been installed. We've started to grow more things the last couple of years, and not only herbs, fresh herbs for infusions or for cooking generally, but a few veg. Could be pak choy, it could be cabbage, it could be garlic, it could be all those things. We just have fun. We have fun. It's more for our own use or for the cookery school rather than, you know, being able to feed all the guests we can cater for in the main restaurant.
But of course,
we try. With the fresh herb is fine, but the vegetable is more for the fun. So I would use whatever is growing on site to cook a nice meal.
A nice family event, yeah. And that sounds like a really good idea to me.
Yeah, even if it's only a dish of vegetable, even a lovely salad, I'm sure we would all be happy with that.
Yes, exactly. Fantastic. Okay, well, thank you so much for giving us that insight into things so far. And I'm now going to take a short break and going to talk to our next guest about their products. And then we're going to come back and talk in detail about the Roux Scholarship. Since 1987, Nordisk, formerly known as Granuladisk, has provided the finest in warewashing technology to commercial kitchens worldwide. Their painted granule technology cleans warewash faster and efficiently with fewer resources such as water, detergent and energy. And since 2023, they've also introduced a new innovative range of dishwashers without granules using smart water technology. It's a pleasure to be joined by their UK and Ireland country sales manager, Keith Broadway, who's a chef by trade and qualified in one of the most prestigious institutions in the UK, Westminster Catering College. He currently runs the UK division of the Swedish Warewash brand and is committed to reducing water, energy and chemical use in the food service sector. He's got a wealth of knowledge in our industry, and having been a chef by trade, it enables him to see the operation from both sides of the pass. Welcome to the show, Keith. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And thank you for the invitation.
No problem at all. So I think it's fair to say that you've had quite an interesting career to date. How did your journey into food service equipment sector start?
I think it's quite crazy, really. Not that anyone would know, but my old man was a dustman.
Oh, right, okay.
And he used to carry the bin on his shoulder and put the rubbish into the back of the lorry. So, yeah. And he used to look after restaurants in a local area. And in conversation once, he said to me, Keith, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, I wouldn't mind being a chef.
Okay.
So he then got me a job in Schooner Inns. So it was a Thursday night as a grill chef. And then I did such a good job that I then worked Thursday, Friday, and then it went into Saturday. So, yeah, that's how the journey started. So thanks, Dad. And, yeah, he'll be up there listening.
And at what age did you then sort of move from cooking into actually the equipment sector?
So, as you said in your intro, I went to Westminster Catering College. I got my 705 and 706 1 and 2, and the 705 being the front and back of house. And so then I went into being a manager, and the company I was working for at the time lost the contract. So it was a contract in the building, lost the contract. And I thought, well, I'm not going to get this again. You know, I was catering for 1,500 people a day on a free issue basis, and which is scary when you're talking about contract catering. Mm. They don't put a value on the food because it's all free as far as the client is concerned. And I got a job offer by Lockhart Catering at the time.
Okay, yeah.
And yeah, I went to Lockhart Catering as a distributor rep. Right. And as you said, you know, having the experience of being a chef, I think it's a good thing to be able to sell the equipment as well.
Yeah, it gives you the knowledge how to apply it in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Can you highlight a couple of key products about Nordisk, who you represent in the UK, and the range that you're most proud about, really?
The products, I think when we look at the product, we look at it from the person. So we need to look, why does a client talk to us about warewashing? What is it that's important to him? So is it the person that's sitting in front of a screen looking at a Excel spreadsheet on how much it is costing me? Is it the kitchen porter that's standing over the sink all day and scrubbing pans by hand? Or is it the chef that needs a clean pot and pan to cook in?
Yeah.
So when we look at Nordisk, we're proud to say that we can save water, energy, labor, chemicals. And it's, you know, it's like it rolls off the tongue. And sustainability used to be a want word. It's now a need word. And we are in a situation where water can become a commodity. So we see, we're sitting here in this superb restaurant and we can see the River Thames flowing past the window, which is the vehicle for nature flowing past the window. Imagine if that wasn't there. It could be a situation where water is a them and us situation. I've got it. You can buy it off me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which is a scary situation to be in. So going back to your question, sorry, I did go off on a bit of a tangent there, but going back to your question, the Granule Smart Plus is a superb product for me, right, which is our drop-down door machine, which uses a biodegradable granules.
Okay.
But it also works as a standard pot washer as well, so we can wash your ancillary items in there.
Without granules?
Without granules. Okay. And the machine recognizes which basket you put in.
Right.
So if you, by mistake or on purpose, because there are naughty people in this world, push the granule button, then the machine recognizes that there's no pots and pans in there because it recognizes the basket.
So it won't break whatever's in there.
Exactly. And it flips over to the water cycle. So the Granule Smart Plus, because it takes away the need to pre-wash or pre-soak any pans, so you're taking the sink away from the operation.
Yeah,
no one's standing over the sink, so you're saving hours a day because you're not having to pre-wash and pre-soak. Then the X2. The X2 machine is a 500 basket, so it looks like a standard hood-type dishwasher.
Okay.
So when you walk up to it today, you might look at it and you're like, that's just a normal dishwasher. But it's got the same technology. It recognizes the basket that's inside the machine.
Right, okay.
So if you put pots in, it will flip over to the large pump. You put plates in, it will go onto the soft pump.
Okay.
But yeah, so
it's, so with those machines, I mean, is there, especially the granules, is there a water saving there on the?
Absolutely. The granule is your green scourer. So if you're in the sink without granule disc.
Yeah.
We still talk about granule disc because although we're called Nordisk, we had a name change last year. We wanted to take the word granule out of our surname because of the water range coming in.
Yeah.
So, yes, the granule is your green scourer that you would use in a sink. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to pre-wash, pre-soak. Going back to when I was a chef years ago, if I burnt a pot, the head chef said to me, go and wash that up.
Okay.
Yeah. You burnt it, yeah, you wash it.
Yeah.
And then the second time you do it, you give it to the kitchen porter, say, look, I'll get you a cup of tea. Can you wash this for me? The third time he's bought a granule disc machine. You don't worry about washing it. You just put it in the machine, the machine does it for you.
Yeah.
So the granule's there as your green scourer.
Okay.
Yeah.
And saving water as well. So, yeah. So, I mean, Nordisk is a brand that's got a world-leading reputation. From your perspective, what makes Nordisk granule disc stand out in the market? What's your, you know, USB?
That is a really good question. And it's a question I'm asked all the time. And I think the reason why we stand out is going back to that. We see the person. We see the operator. We see the challenges the operator has every day.
Yeah.
I started with Granule Disc 2010.
Okay.
So I wouldn't be working there now if I didn't care.
Believe in it. And
exactly. And believe. Because when I had my initial introductory interview, I said, why do I want to wash? Why do I want to sell pot washers? They don't work, do they?
Yeah.
You've got to do all the stuff in front of the machine before you put it in the machine. And you're just using that machine as a sanitizer unit.
Mm-hmm.
And my boss at the time said, you haven't heard about granule disc. So what makes us sit forward is our ethos, our care. We're looking to save the planet one drop at a time.
Right, okay.
Which is a nice thing to say,
isn't
it?
It's a nice thing. And I know you're quite serious about that.
Yeah.
Which leads me on to my next question. I know you're serious about, we've talked about this a lot, about reducing water, energy, chemical usage. Why is that kind of important to you?
Water is something that we take for granted. You know, what would life be without water? You know, we walk along the river with our loved one, we sit with our family and we feed the ducks. Yeah. And then we sit in this superb restaurant and we look at that flowing river out there, which is carries nature every day. Imagine if that wasn't there. We sit at home and we hear the dripping tap, losing its water one drop at a time. So slowly that life vehicle is disappearing. As I said before, it could become a commodity. That's quite scary, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we need to save water. We need to save energy. Like, sustainability used to be a want word. It's now a need word.
Yeah.
But sustainability isn't just saving water, energy, labor, chemicals. It's also caring about your staff. So we need, you know, we bring our staff into an area that they're comfortable working in. The pot wash situation used to be forgotten about. It's one of them things at the back of the kitchen.
Yeah.
I don't care about that. Chefs now care about it.
Yeah.
So.
And I think it also leads into getting staff, doesn't it? I mean, retaining staff. It's hard finding staff. Mm. And then, yeah, I've been into pot wash areas that just look absolutely horrendous.
That's
scary. No one wants to work in them.
Yeah. And we've worked in them, you know, Chef de Plonge.
Yeah.
You know, we've been there. Yeah. And it is an area that costs a lot of money. Because, you know, 20 litres of water on the tap that's opened, a faucet that's opened, and that's running all day. We walk into kitchens and the tap is just open and it's flowing and it's slowing.
Yeah, just wasting water.
Yeah. That water needs to be heated up.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, moving forward, the chef just wants a clean pot and pan.
Yeah.
So if we can give him that within a metre with our Granule Smart Plus machine, then why not?
Yeah. Okay. Fine. So, I mean, what's next for Nordisk? What's anything you can share with us? Any sneak peeks coming down the pipeline?
So, yeah, sneak peeks. Although we've introduced the water smart technology and we've taken Granule out of our surname,
yeah,
we are still heavily invested in R&D to build the next Granule Disc machine.
Okay.
And there is something that's going to be launched next year, which I can't tell you about.
Right, of course.
Within the Water Smart range, we're next thing is a glass washer.
Okay.
So we know we have the X2, which is there as a hood type machine that can wash pots and pans as well.
Mm-hmm.
We have a hood type machine under counter. Next one is a glass washer.
Under counter. Okay.
And the beauty of our machines, you might say, well, where's sustainability in that? The fact we have a sequential rinse that is patented and it only uses 1.3 liters of water in the rinse. That way we can save water. So sustainability is still there with our water smart technology.
Right. That's making big savings.
Making big savings.
Keith, thanks for giving us insight into your career in Nordisk. We're now going to go back and Alan is going to rejoin us with me and Keith, and we're going to talk about the Roux Scholarship. Now, Alan rejoins me and Keith, and we're discussing detail about the Roux Scholarship. Alan, what first inspired you and your family to establish the Roux Scholarship?
Well, it all started, uncle and dad were pretty upset to see, 40 years ago, well, actually 50 years ago, that those young British chefs could not have a job in Europe, especially France.
Seriously?
No, they were turned away.
Wow, okay.
Not only going and trying to knock at the door of those very good famous restaurants, But trying to send their CV and an application, a work application, they were turned away.
Cool.
Most of the time, not even an answer reply of no. But yeah, it was just insane. And uncle and dad were really, really upset to see that those young, willing chefs were promising chefs as well.
Yeah.
Should have had as much chance and possibility of working where they wanted to, you know, to gain knowledge and to discover the world of cooking. And they felt like they had to bring help and change things. So they decided to start the Roux Scholarship as a cooking competition.
Okay.
To choose the winner.
Mm-hmm.
And that winner was offered a 3-month stage at that time to work in a 3-Michelin-star restaurant in Europe. So most of those winners, the first few years, did actually choose France
in Paris.
Mainly. Across the country.
Okay, across, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Well, I mean, what I think that was that, you know, say France or Europe were reluctant to take British chefs?
Well, it's the, unfortunately, it's the image that people, not only in France, but in Europe, could have towards England.
Right.
You know, England had nothing about representing good food, apart from a roast beef. it was, you know, no British chef were known to be able to, you know, feed anyone properly.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking back on my time at Westminster Catering College, because it's a scoffier that was at a catering college. So I'm just wondering to ask the question, what was the British? You just said about roast beef.
Yeah.
And that's all they saw. The rest of the world just thought roast beef, fish and chips.
Yeah.
And
fish and chips, roast beef.
Wow.
And red currant jelly. and mint sauce.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was what people knew about the country.
About UK. Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's quite scary, really, because going back too many years ago for me, 40 years ago, I was in the college being taught by some superb chefs and having, you know, your Cesarani there in the book, the Practical Cookery, the Professional Practical Cookery book, your Escoffier book, and, you know, the Delacroix. I can't even remember the words. I mean, I know they're all in your dad's library just around the corner.
Yep.
And that was where the tutoring was coming from. It was all coming from France.
Yeah, they
into
were.
Into the UK.
Yeah.
There definitely. Were a lot of foreign chefs that were, you know, cooking in UK. But there were some, you know, a few British chefs who were very talented.
Mm.
And the young generation were showing massive interest and skills as well.
It's quite crazy.
And a few good, if not excellent, catering colleges as well. And yeah, my uncle and dad were just very upset to see that they were not given an opportunity to have a go and gain knowledge by going abroad. And going abroad in those days was quite a thing, you know. You're leaving home, leaving homeland, and a different language.
Yeah.
On top of that, salaries were certainly not good, if not abuse. So, yeah, something had to be changed.
Yeah, and kids didn't get on the planes then, did they? They're quite comfortable today just getting on a plane themselves and going around the world on there.
Well, those chefs were certainly taking the ferry.
The ferry, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Fair point.
I think people are going to be shocked to hear that. It's an amazing insight. And, I mean, leads on quite well to my next sort of point for you is, how do you feel that the Roux Scholarship has impacted on the chefs that have done it? And is there any particular specific chefs that you wanted to highlight at all? Or?
Well, out of those, 40 Roux scholars, unfortunately, we've lost two dear friends, scholars, Andrew Fairley and Pravin. All of them, I think, deserve, their place of, you know, being a Roux scholar. In their own right and their own way, because they're all very much individual and they've got their own personality on top of that. But yeah, which one is better? I can't say, but they're all still showing, you know, their skills and what they're doing is, if you follow some of them, they've got, you know, Michelin stars does say it all, really. They've got, you know, 1-2 Michelin star.
Okay.
And I'm sure some will reach the 3-star in the next few years, definitely. But the young scholars in the last few years as well, they're just showing that, you know, people want to follow them.
Yeah.
People are bringing them opportunities. And they do believe and see that they've got the skills and they are the next shining stars of the future.
The kind of world, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, on previous podcasts, we talk about this, how to, you know, encourage people to join our industry, to become chefs, as it seems to be a sort of a bit of a...
And it is important, you know, especially the Roux scholarship is not only winning, well, partaking is the first thing I should say, because you don't need to win and become a scholar to get something out of it. You have to partake.
Partake, okay.
And it's a very good thing to do.
When I went through my training, I've come out of the kitchen, as you know, and I think one thing it does, we see the kitchen now as a stage, and it's where the chef can perform and create his food for the person that's going to eat it. But when I went through it, you know, 40 years ago, and when the Roux Scholarship was probably being, you know, first thought about, chefs weren't the superstars, were they? It was always...
I think that's obviously something that the fame of being a chef is mainly being brought up with television.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Books first and after television. But the Roux Scholarship is I see it as a platform of, you know, it's a group. The way those scholars, you know, communicate together, they're all in touch with each other.
Mm. Yeah.
And they basically get support from each other. And whatever help is needed, they just share so many things together. And a lot these days, because of, you know, our interaction on social media,
mm,
or whatever platform, it's massive. It's great to see that they can progress a lot more and a lot faster.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And it's, yeah, but it's obviously highly, highly accredited. And what are you looking for from the chefs that want to join, that want to apply to be a Roux Scholar or get involved in the competition?
Well, the competition has got different stages. The first, okay, one, we normally bring an ingredient, a main ingredient, and an addition. So that could be fish or meat, and an addition of normally one vegetable.
Okay.
Or something to do a garnish. So the recipe has to be made by the entrant for the appliant to cook a dish for 4 people as a written recipe. So the judges, we receive and we mark all those recipes without knowing who is sending the recipe. There's no name, no CV, no background. We just judge blind. And we're about 10 to 12 judges,
okay,
on board. We discuss if needed to make sure we choose the 18 best recipes. Those chosen recipes, those chefs come and cook on the same day in the 2 catering schools, one in Birmingham and in London. And we basically ask them as well on that day, not only to cook that dish that they submitted, but as well we add them a mystery basket,
okay,
to create a dessert for 4 people.
And they don't know that at all beforehand?
No, they just get 45 minutes to work out what they're going to be doing. So when they've cooked their main dish, when they've done their dessert, we judge by the way they've been working and we judge the tasting. We choose on that day from the 18 best chefs cooking on that day. We choose the 6 chefs that deserve to go into the final. So there's 6 chefs going into the final. They ask on the day to cook a dish.
Okay.
It's been over the years a few changes. Very much early days was a classic of French cuisine, mm-hmm. Being asked to be cooked. After that, we moved on with very traditional, classic type of dishes of cuisine bourgeoise, I would say.
Okay.
So prepared and served, cooked and served on platters for, I would say, between 8 to 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
So big, large servings, something that not many chefs do these days anyway. So we've tried to move away from that because we fought and we saw that it was maybe a bit too French, a bit too old-fashioned, and that we were maybe stopping and restraining chefs to be able to show their own style.
Okay.
And we wanted to give them a bit more freedom on what to cook on that day. So now we as well, since the last, I think, 8 to 10 years, we do invite an international guest judge. So the last one was Chef Thomas Keller. So we try to have a dish that we ask them to cook, which has a bit of an influence and a connection with the chef.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's, I think that's the summary of the competition.
Of the competition,
so
it's not,
it's quite complex.
I bet you've seen some, when they get that basket, I bet you've seen some weird and wonderful things come out of that basket. I've got to be careful of what I say.
Yeah, the mystery basket for the dessert is very challenging, but we try to guide them as much as we can and to remind them that all the judges, we would prefer to see something simple, something that they've done before. It's not the day to try to, you know, to create or try to do a dish that they've never made in the past.
Yeah.
To just cook it properly and to make it taste good.
Not to set them up as such.
No, it's a challenge, but we don't want it to be a punishment, you know. We don't want to see chefs being put down. We want to try to motivate them, if anything else.
Yeah, give them, use their inspiration and imagination.
Their inspiration, make sure they can use their knowledge, and we want them to perform well.
There's an underlining caring that comes through your conversation. You tend to think about everybody that's in there. And when I go into a kitchen today, I'm there talking about, okay, pot washing is probably the last thing you want to talk about. But it's all about sustainability in the future and looking after that family you speak about. Do you talk about that in the scholarship, or do they know that before they walk in the door?
Yeah, I think we might talk a bit about that, but I think it's quite natural. I think we all the judges, part of the Roux Scholarship, and there's a few of the family members now because Emilie Roux has joined the board. I think it's for all of us, it's natural.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, we see it as, you know, we're all chefs, we're all cooks, and a chef is the same.
Mm.
You can be a chef in a 3-star in the Michelin Guide, or you can be a chef in a pub.
Mm.
Or in a catering, business where you do some outside catering, it's the same.
Yeah.
You know, you cook with your heart.
Yeah.
And you cook with the same ingredients, pretty much. And you just try to deliver the best you can. So a kitchen is a kitchen. A chef is a chef.
Mm, and sustainability isn't just about saving energy, water, labor, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, we sit here and look out the window and see the lovely water there. We take for granted. I just wonder sometimes if it's not taken for granted too much. And have you seen impact with this? Are my question to you, I suppose. Have you seen impact on the rising cost of the products, because that is having an impact on that side of things.
I mean, that's a subject which unfortunately has no end, because I think we all in our world, every human being has got something, some work to be done on that. Talking about the river, lately hasn't been very good.
No.
We were even told not to water our herbs or our vegetable with the water because it was so polluted.
Wow, okay.
So hopefully in the next few weeks there will be some changes, but that's what the water authorities have discovered doing their routine test. But yeah, the you know, doing your bit is important.
Yeah, I totally.
But there's, I think, a lot of work. And when I say work from all of us, it's I think we should see leaders. I see myself. I try to be part of the leaders in our industry, in our profession. But I wish I could see as well a more joint work and support from our political leaders.
Totally agree. Well, we're going for an election soon, so perhaps that might turn things around a bit.
I will cut it short on that.
Exactly. Keith, what's your involvement with the Roux Scholarship, or have you?
That's a very good question, because we're very proud to have both our granule-based wash system in your main kitchen, and then in the scholarship we have our water-based machine. I think the reason why we like is we get feedback from these guys.
Yeah.
So we're showing the future chefs what technology is out there today to help them. And that feedback is then taken back to our offices in Sweden, and it's listened to. And that's the main thing that we get out of working with these guys, right. I suppose.
Yeah. It's helpful.
Yeah, it's helpful. It's because we need to show what technologies are out there. I remember sitting down with my boss here with Alan, and he said to me, and I wrote it down at the time, I remember him saying it, and I buy the best equipment because it shows on the plate. And you remember saying and I quite like that idea. The fact that, you know, whether it's a pot washer, whether it's an oven, whether it's whatever it is, you know, we need to give these guys a tool, because sustainability is not just about saving water. It's also making the environment for the people where they work, somewhere they want to come and work. Because then you're going to go a happy brigade. You're going to have a person that comes in every day and wants to work. That's also part of sustainability, I believe.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Alan, obviously you talked about the Roux Scholarship and where it came from. Is it open to just the UK chefs, or is it now open outside of that? And how do you feel I know you've touched on it, but it's contributing to the sort of culinary world and the culinary landscape.
It's open to Great Britain and Ireland.
Okay.
So basically, any nationality, the background is basically we just ask people to have done a minimum of a few years work on
in those two locations.
In land for otherwise it's having catering school, the basics of, you know, the industry's exams. But there's no class of, you know, any nationality or any background, or that's the main thing. And the age, we try to put an age limit of 30 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel the food service equipment market can support the work that the Roux Scholarship are doing?
I think that kitchen equipment manufacturers today is limited, because chefs have a traditional way of cooking and they want to see new things and they want to try new things. But as a manufacturer, I think just listening, understanding, and listen to the person, you know, what does he want? What is his challenges today? technologies is there. I mean, I saw an oven the other day that you can talk to and it will then roast a piece of beef for you. You know, it's there for you. So the IoT is there and that will come in big time. The technologies are there, but just listen to the chef. Listen to the kitchen porter who's had that challenge every day.
Yeah.
Because we don't do that a lot too much. We need to do more than that, more of that.
It comes back to your sort of feedback thing and
exactly.
Being able to evolve the equipment.
I think, chef, you've worked in kitchens, you know, with a standard chopping block years ago, and then things move on. Have you seen technology change things in the kitchen?
It's non-stop. Mm. And you have to live with your world and in your time. Technology is a great thing. I think you should always keep an open mind, an open eye, and an open ear with people.
Mm.
People who are, you know, part of that chain. You know, I couldn't work with your great machine, your great equipment. Saying that, I couldn't work without the young generation. And I try to follow and see the expectation of how they like to work. And they've got as well a different vision. They've got different ideas, great ideas. And they sometimes bring question marks to myself.
Yeah, they need the voice.
And exactly. And they make subject and things go forward. And that's how we develop and we can work all together. And that's how I've seen massive improvement, you know, especially in a good machine that can do the washing up.
Fantastic, of course. How do you see the Roux Scholarship evolving as we go next few years?
Well, you never know these days. I wish we can continue to run it as a family, being family members.
Yeah.
So, you know, my cousin, myself, we're not getting younger. but Emily joined this year, so it's a great thing.
Yeah.
She's got children, my children, who knows what they will all be doing. If it stays in the family and it's run and still family members can partake and carry that on, wonderful.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I think uncle and dad do deserve that. And before anything, I should actually say the British young chefs, male, female, whatever, they deserve it.
Yeah.
And that is forever, I hope. So if not, I'm sure the actual scholars will be taking over.
And it will.
They when I see the strength of, you know, what those scholars do together, especially when they get together, but I know they get in touch and they keep in touch with each other, I'm sure they would love and they will keep that going and they will run the scholarship otherwise.
Definitely. And it's an amazing legacy for, obviously.
It is. And at the end of the day, it's only really to... If it can help, that's all that matters.
A great gang to be in.
It is. So, as is tradition, Alan, in this series, the guest of the current episode poses the question to the guest of the next episode. I know you know who the next guest is. So, Alan, what question would you like to ask my next chef guest?
Well, I believe it's Chef Sean. So I would say, what would be Sean's choice of a thing that he would cook for a demonstration to his customers? Would it be vegetable? Would it be fish? Would it be meat? What would it be?
Fantastic. Okay. And we'll find out on the next episode what Sean says. I think you'll be quite flattered to have the question from you. So, yeah, that's everything, Alan. Thank you so much for your time today. It's honestly been an absolute pleasure to be here. I hope you've enjoyed it.
I loved it. Thank you, Radford. And always a pleasure to see Keith again. And thank you, Keith, for your great support with
thank
your
you.
Equipment.
And thank you as well, Keith, for making it happen. So thank you.
Yeah, it's been fun.
So a big thank you to Alain Roux and Keith Broadway for taking the time to be on the show. I'd like to extend a special thank you to Alain and his team for allowing us to record here at the Waterside Inn. And also thank you to Tom Anderson from Sound Rebel for his support in today's recording. That concludes this episode of Kitchen Curiosity. It's been amazing to get an insight into Alain Roux's career, the Roux Scholarship, and products from Nordisk on the market. Thank you to the listeners for tuning in. If you've got any questions for future guests, please let me know, and you can email me at radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk. On the next episode, we're going to be recording in Scotland, interviewing Sean Hall, who's a chef who works for a leading food service equipment manufacturer, and he has a genuine passion for all things food. We're also joined by two gentlemen who represent manufacturers from the AFE Group, who manufacture equipment here in the UK. I'm also going to be joined by the chairman of the Master Chefs of Great Britain and the chief executive of HIT and the Scottish Hospitality Group. And we're going to be discussing in depth about the hospitality sector in Scotland. Click subscribe to follow us. And if you've got a moment, please rate the podcast. Don't miss out on the next episode coming out on the 4th of July. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.